Okay, Shavua Tov, Gedvach. For those who don't know me, I'm Yechiel Spira. And tonight we'll speak a little bit about Kashrus. Tonight's address is more or less in the realm of speaking conceptually. And we're not, to the disappointment to some, perhaps I'm not here to say eat this Kashrus or don't eat another. We do that at times, but I don't think that's where we're heading tonight. I would like to say, first of all, if anyone bought the Kashrus book from the shul, to please take note that it's last year's, and like even if it were this year's, if you go to any restaurants, double check to see what the Hechsher is, that things haven't changed. It's a difficult one tonight because I was thinking on the way back from Chevron what one says, and I actually feel, I would say, spiritually jet-lagged. I think we took off somewhere Friday afternoon and spent Shabbos quite elevated. And as the bus pulled out of the Machpelah, Moshe Shabbos was the downer. So the trick is to take what we had over Shabbos with us into Slichos. And for those who have not experienced Shabbos and Chevron, it's highly recommended. I don't know how many people here, some I recognize, but I don't know how many people here are new to Eretz Yisrael or how many are veterans. People often tell me, especially people coming from Chutz La'aretz, North America, Europe, that Kashrus in Eretz Yisrael is very complicated, it's so different, and it's, how do you figure out what to do? I would agree there is an element of, we'll call it that, the situation may be somewhat complicated, but I maintain, I always have, and I still do, what makes the Kashrus so complicated in Eretz Yisrael is our incorrect assumptions, and it's the premise that we make that one can eat anywhere one wishes, more or less, especially if a place has the label Mahadrin. And based on that fact, how do we differentiate between one Mahadrin and another, one Badatza and another? How do we know where to eat? And my response to that is, unfortunately, the realistic situation today in Israel is that it's still not one Al Pi Halacha and Kashrus, it's still not what it should be. And one is best advised to conduct oneself as he did from whatever country you came prior to living here. And that is, you assume a restaurant is not kosher until you know it's reliably, or has a reliable hechsher. Whatever reliable means may not be the same for everyone. That's what one has to decide, speaking with a spouse, a rav. But the point is, the pitfalls begin, and we get complicated when it starts with, sure, we can eat everywhere, and then we start saying, why can't I eat here? It has to go the other way around. And for those that have been through the lectures in the shul the last few years and have read some of the materials and have heard from a few different speakers, I think that message is quite clear. I think the marketing people, and I call them the marketing people, the Rabbanim, or possibly the lay people, that came up with the idea to add the words glot and mahadrin to the kashrus scene in Eretz Yisrael could probably, looking back in retrospect, were probably as successful as some of the greatest CEOs around the world that run major corporations. Because, and above all, the word Mahadrin. The Mahadrin word added to the Kashrus industry in Eretz Yisrael has done more to put the public at ease than any measure that any Mashkiach or Rav or Mashi has taken to actually improve the Kashrus. And in reality, in many cases, the word Mahadrin is just what it is. The word Mahadrin spelled in Hebrew or English and adds nothing, contributes nothing, and just falsely puts out a false claim. And it gets people to think we can eat. You know, the most frequent question that I get is, or email, can I eat here? I'm invited to a wedding. We're going to a hotel. We're going away for Pesach. We're going out to eat. 50th anniversary, birthday. But it's Mahadrin, what's wrong? And sometimes I'll say, okay, what does Mahadrin mean? And then it's when it goes silent at the other end. Because the truth is, most people don't have a clue. I will say, honestly, for some of the agencies, I don't know what Mahadrin means either, because it's not a legal term and it's not really a Shulchan Aruch term. It has to do with Kashrus. It has become a de facto term in Kashrus in our lifetime, so it is nogea, it does have relevance. Okay, if Mahadran is indeed used legitimately, it should take an eatery from a regular level of kosher, we'll discuss somewhat what regular is, to a higher level. It will include some hidurim, some chumos, it will take into account some stringencies, some things that aren't baseline kosher, but take it to a higher level. And that's really, in essence, what the Mahadran should do. All Mahadran Hechsherim are not created equally, and all Hechsherim that make a claim of Mahadran don't adhere to it. That's where the problem begins. And for me, after doing this many years, it's still very difficult to deal at times with Rabbanim, who are Talmidei Chachamim, there's no other word for it, and yet the Hashkacha, it doesn't happen. You know, I was trying to think of an analogy, and something I thought of this evening is, we have children in yeshiva, and we've chosen to send a child to a particular educational institute, the most dote that we choose, we select. But I think as the children go through the school, we'll say, why that third grade Rebbe, this guy, you know, you have to hope when your kid's in second grade that he'll get this Rebbe. There's 3 third grade classes, but this guy, he's the one. The kids love him. They can't wait to get the yeshiva. What they learn in third grade, they won't learn in all of elementary school together from this one Rebbe. And that's the same with mashgichim. There's some guys that are out there asleep at the wheel collecting a paycheck. And there's some guys out there that are diligent and they're really out there doing what they should do and earn our trust legitimately. There's also some guys out there that shouldn't even be there. And how they got the job is not relevant, but they're definitely in the wrong profession. Unfortunately, we see the same sometimes in schools where certain people, for whatever reason, they just don't have it anymore. And you have to understand it. So there's two options. There's two different ways we have to approach this. Number one is you have to decide for yourself which hechsherim you accept. And that's a decision you have to make before you start looking about eating. And when you're sitting, when someone calls me up in the Plaza Hotel 3 hours before Shabbos and says, can I eat here? You know, we're here, we're booked in for Shabbos. My answer was, I think it's a ridiculous question, because if I said no, you wouldn't be going anywhere anyway. What would you do? Not eat for Shabbos? That's not the time to do it. So you need to find what hechsherim are good for you, and how you'll decide to reach that. My suggestion is that you happen to have a rav in this community who really does know about kashrus, so it's a good address. And then if you'd like to go to the next step, and my own opinion is that's your own choice, meaning if I find a hechsher that I trust and I rely upon, I go to a restaurant, I validate the tuda, I see it's good, you can sit down and eat. If you choose you want to speak to the mashgiach, that's another level. You know, often people say, should I speak to the mashgiach? And I say, well, when you speak to him, what will you say? And they say, I have no idea. You know, so the idea is if you're speaking to the mashgiach, you should have a reason why you're speaking to him. I would advise, on a serious note, though, at any restaurant, to ask, is the mashgiach there? And just say, Shalom Aleichem, I wanted to make sure you're here. One of the problems the kashrus industry has is an employer is always looking to cut costs, and that's a sensible business approach. You want to keep overhead at a minimum. And when a hashgacha says, I need the mashgiach for 8 hours a day, and from a non-knowledgeable point of view, a boss may see this guy, what he perceives is not working hard enough, or sitting around, or how many hours can you sit and play with leaves of lettuce? I mean, this is a joke, right? I'm being ripped off. It's difficult for the mashgiach, it's difficult for the hashgacha. If patrons would become accustomed to saying, is the mashgiach in? I need to speak to him before I'm seated. For one thing, it gives a chizuk to the mashgiach. It keeps him on his toes as well because he has to be there. It also shows the balabayit that this mashgiach is a valuable player in your marketing. And without this gentleman being here, people would not sit down and eat. So it is a good thing to do in a hotel and a restaurant to ask, I'd like to speak to the mashgiach before I sit down. And you could say, I want to make sure you're here. You know, I take kashrus seriously and I'd like to know. I would like to sidetrack for a moment because I don't want to forget it. I should have started with it. Excuse me, it's mamish off the track. But because we're in Elul and it's a time, it's still kashrus, but it's not food kashrus. It's a time when many people will buy a shofar, many people will have their tefillin checked. The last weeks, the bulletins are coming in every direction. I cannot urge you strongly enough, if you're going to a shofar, make sure it's one with a tudah, a reputable person. Either the Rav recommends in the community. There's some places in Yerushalayim that I know. There are people out there that are good, honest, and know what they're doing al pi halacha. The fear is The fears in the tefillin industry are no different than the eating food kashrus industry. You know, today there's problems with the ritzuyot, with the straps, there's problems with the gidin, the thread that the sinu that they sew the tefillin up with, and you can mamish have the most hidro batim, wonderful parshas, and chas v'shalom they'll be puzzle because they're sewn up with fishing line and instead of gidin. And the same thing with the shofar. I'm not getting into statistics, I'm not going to get into a lot. The Eidah Haredi just put it out. And for those that know me over the years, for me it's never about politics. I don't care what, in your eyes, what I appear to be. To me it's not about, if you're in the army, you're not in the army, you say Halil, you don't, all of that, that's your own life. It doesn't even come into my machshava. It's about honesty and kashrus and honesty in every aspect of it. And the guy with the hat and with the kippah sugar, they all have the ability of being the same talmidei chachamim and equally as honest. So it's not about pushing an agenda. But the, most of the shofar being sold in Eretz Yisrael are puzzle. An apostle shofar cannot be fixed into a kosher shofar in most cases. You need to know where you're buying a shofar. Many of those large shofar, the Taimani ones that everyone likes to buy in Ben Yehuda Street or the tourist shops, are not even from an animal that's kosher to be a shofar. You need to know where you're buying a shofar. If you're doing it for the mitzvah, if you're doing it just to hang on a mantel place, buy whatever you like. So I'm putting that out there. There are stores that have shofar with hashgachas tagged on them, or the actual store has hashgacha. You need to really, you're going to try to be mekayim such a tremendous mitzvah, chas v'shalom, you're coming in, it's a non-starter. You're blowing a horn that's gone before you started. So keep those things in mind, and the tefillin checking as well. Okay, back to eating out. Eating kashrus. Kashrus is broken up into several different aspects. I do believe, I've learned that much over the years, that not every hashgacha is the same across the board. Meaning I see hashgacha as there's the factory aspect. When we go to the store, we buy goods and awesome product, for example. That's the factory supervision. There's restaurant supervision. And there's shechita. Many hashgachas have shechita. They do their own slaughtering. And not everyone is on the, not every hashgacha maintains the same level in every aspect of the kashrus. And you may find that a rav says, you know, you can eat their chickens, but don't eat in the restaurant, or, you know, buy their crackers, don't eat the chickens. It's not that bizarre. It's just because they may have different setups and different aspects of their kashrus. You'll also find, or you may hear, as you start asking for mashgichim, it will not be a strange event if you go into a restaurant that has two hashgachas, whether it's a regular rabbanut with a badatz, which is not uncommon, and you say, I'd like to see both mashgiach, and the same guy appears. Often, ironically, the industry in America started, it didn't come from Eretz Yisrael, but often the term used for that is piggybacking, and they do use the same mashgichim for different agencies at times. It's not about ripping off the consumer, that it's bogus, and how come we have two hashgachas and there's only one mashgiach. It's about keeping costs to a minimum to try to alleviate having to pass more cost increase onto the consumer. What happens is an agency will have a mifakech, an inspector, he'll run around for the rabbanut, he'll run around for badatz, and then the badatz will check the mashgiach and they'll say, this guy's good in certain hours, the rabbanut has a mashgiach, we'll use the same guy for those hours and we'll put our one guy in to fill in for the other hours. It's a very common practice. It's an acceptable practice too, I believe. If you trust the hashgacha, then you also would trust hashgacha's judgment in who they hire as a mashgiach and how this system is set up. We've gone over a great deal of it over the last 2 years of the lectures here, and those that were present can start looking at some of the slides and understanding it, that so much goes into the kashrus industry that you can understand why there are more expensive chickens, less expensive chickens, far beyond the retail marketing and profit factors. The bird costs more than manufacturer from the shechita until it reaches the supermarket shelves. That's part of the realities. If any of you have been following the website over the recent weeks, you've seen I came out with one of those get-in-trouble articles. They seem to appear every few years. This time the target was the Jerusalem Rabbanut. I say what I believe after researching it, what I feel is fair and adequate research, and I spoke to the people, and it was self-explanatory. I'm not here to explain or justify the article, but I'm here to say this is the capital of Eretz Yisrael, and yet things are not what they should be. Baruch Hashem, the last I've checked in Beit Shemesh, and that was last year when we did the guide, it was on a much better level. The Rabbanut here left me with the impression that Rabbi Switzer does a good job, and it is what he claims to be, Baruch Hashem. Okay, that said, I don't believe regular Rabbanut Hashgacha is suitable, what I call the Ben Torah. I can't give you a better explanation, it's just the explanation I use. Okay, when I've lectured, I've often said, you need to understand a few concepts. Number one, what is a good heksha? To me, a good heksha means they claim to do A, B, C, and D, and they do it. That's a good heksha. Is every good heksha suitable? Absolutely not. So you have to understand the difference. A heksha could be a good heksha, meaning the Rabbanim say this is what we do, but it's on a low level. It's not what you should be eating. All right, a suitable heksha means it's good, of course, but then it's also on a high enough level. How do we know? The Kashrus Guide, for example, we've tried last year to put in several dozen pages of information of what some of the different hashgachas do to give you an idea of the differences. Daf Guy put in the Eda Chavedit there because that's the high end, so if you know what the extreme end is, you have something to compare the others to. Okay, for an example, if you go to Machan Yehuda, I can picture in my head, and I'll draw examples from Yerushalayim because I haven't been running around Beit Shemesh, Ramat Beit Shemesh recently, so it's, my information could be outdated. But if you go to the Shuk, there's a bakery, pizza and rolls, made on the premises, that's under Bells. It's a legitimate hashgacha, everyone's heard of Badatz Machzik Adas, it's the Bells of Rebbe Shlita. But you don't know if you didn't ask and if you didn't find out and you didn't speak to Mashgiach that everything, Hafashas Chalad is done by the Eved. That's the practice. The way they have it set up, they rely on one of the Heterim from Aval Yosef Zitzal, and that's the way the bakery runs. So for many people who know the difference, who don't want to rely on by the Eved their whole life, they would say, wow, I didn't know that, so I'm not buying pizza in this place. Doesn't mean it's not legitimate. It means it's legitimate and they're relying on Heterim. But if you don't know these things, it requires a knowledge of kashrus and Shulchan Aruch, a minimal knowledge to start understanding what's the differences. The alternative is you say, has a Bell's Heksha, it's not expired, this is fine, who cares? That's fine too. But there are things that come into play, and there's many things like that. There are places, believe it or not, there's some places out there I've learned this week where non-religious guys are told put on a yarmulke and separate challah during the day, and the kashrus is relying on that. A place like an Eda Chaveda would not buy into that in a lifetime. If that works for you, that's fine. You know, if you go to Machan Yehuda, for example, forget about pita, just to buy fruit and vegetables. If you go shopping in the shuk and you're one of these people, one and one straight from shul, get done early, beat the crowd, then understand something. Anything you buy before 9:30 in the morning, 9:15, 9:30, you might be buying where two Muslim maestros are separated by the Eved, which means the Mashgiach comes at 9:15. It's called Breira for those that know what the Shulchan Aruch is about. He has kavanah to do it. He hasn't actually separated anything. He's not even there yet. So you're buying stuff that the Mashgiach has kavanah to separate Truman Maisa on only after he gets there, which is a heta. There are many people that say, though, it's a heta b'shat al-chak. You can't use it day to day. You shouldn't be using it at all, depending on your rav, depending where you're at, depending what you adhere to. But know that. You go to the shuk at 9:30, at 9 o'clock, Truman Maisa has been set aside in the Mashgiach's head. No one's actually done anything. So these are some of the things that come into play. I've always maintained, and that's what ultimately the goal is, and the whole point of all of this, it's not about giving any hashgacha a black eye, as Rabbi Kuba mentioned last year for those that heard his lecture. It's about hopefully one day implementing a system with third-party auditing. All right, if you're from the United States, you're all familiar with the famous seal, the UL, the Underwriters Laboratory, you know, whether it's a radio, a phone, I think clothing as well. Items are manufactured, this independent lab checks it, and they announce to the world, we've done our check, and we say it adheres to our standards for safety and whatever else they check for. We'll put the Underwriters Laboratory stamp. In Israel, we have a tough tekken. We need an equivalent for kashrus. We need to start changing the industry around. We need to try to tell the hashgachas, by the way, all do this for making money. It's not l'shem shemayim. That we're not going to continue eating without having an idea of what you're doing or if what you're claiming to do and what your standards are. I'd like to compare one to another. I'm not saying anyone's defrauding me or duping me, but I'd like to know, when you say it's Bishul Yisrael for Sfardim, does that mean only frum guys are cooking? Or could it be not frum people cooking? When you tell me the wine in the restaurant is mavushal, does that mean it's really mavushal, it was boiled, or was it pasteurized and you're lying on a heta? And these are things people need to know. Okay, for example, if I don't hold for the heter, and I say I only drink mavusha wine, and you go out to a business meeting with a non-Jew, or according to many poskim, a non-religious Jew, and you know that this hashgach is mahadrin, and they only have mavusha wine, and you sit down, you're drinking, and you find out the mavusha wine is pasteurized wine, it's not mavusha wine, and you don't rely on the heter. So as far as you, your hashgacha, the way you live your life, this wine is now treif. because the non-Jew's been touching it and pouring it, and you have a bottle of treif wine on the table. Have a good time dealing with that now. These are real situations. It's also a matter of understanding the halacha and understanding what the standards are. And the standards vary, all right? People always want to hear what you think. My thinking, I don't think my opinion is that important. I think there's rabbanim like the Moed Asr here that are really talmidei chacham that know. My opinion is there's an Eda Charedi, there's a Rav Landau, there's a Rav Rubin, and then there's everybody else in a different league. All right, you can put those in whatever order you like. The point is there's the top tier, and then there's the mediocre Badatzim, and then there's the Rabbanut. And again, it's not a political statement, that's the reality. Not all the Rabbanuts. There are Rabbaniyot, Baruch Hashem, that do an outstanding job, that are high up. There's some that I'm not familiar with, and there's some, unfortunately, that I think fail miserably. All right, I'll give you an example. The Rabbanu puts out bulletins, Midei Palm, for the Mashkichim. This one came out within the last 2 weeks. See, one point I was reading on the way here. This is a note. This one blew me. This was dated Yud Bet Elul, August 30th, so it's fairly recent. All right, it talks about Kufa Chonat, Kablut, right. Okay, so the Rabbanu, it's item number 11, it talks about Pita. I put an article up on my website too because it really annoyed me. They're talking about, if you're familiar with Yerushalayim, it's the best example. They have a few pita bakeries in the Shuk. They put out tens of thousands of pita a day. Okay, they sold, a lot of them are sold on the spot. And then many of them go on to push carts. And in the case of Machne Yehuda, they're goyim that take these carts and push them through town, stop at various restaurants and drop off the pita to the restaurants, and they make 5, 6, 10 deliveries a day, depending, you know, a lot of these chumas restaurants, they want to have fresh pita all day. They can't get a delivery at 8 in the morning, and they're not going to make do with it for the entire day. So this guy comes half a dozen times a day and drops off X amount of pita. So Rabbanut says, not me, Rabbanut says there's a problem, because the halacha says basically, if you remember the lectures, some of things need one seal, some things need two. Bread is one of the items that has to have one seal. So that meant if you put the bread into a bag that was printed that said Angel's Bakery, for example, and it was sealed, you'd be fine. So the non-Jew is a shliach, but he's bringing you a sealed bag. The bag's integrity has not been compromised. So you can say, wow, Angel's Pizza, I'll use these. But they don't do that. They throw them loosely into wooden trays or boxes, and they're delivered like this with no simone kashrus, with no simone whatsoever. And he walks around town. So there is that, just to be fair, there are Rabbanim that will say, the only time we have to worry about the shlichus, about a shliach going, is you worry he'll make a switch, it's meat, he'll switch, it's expensive. Pita is a pita, it's a few agavot item, we don't have to worry about it. But the point is, lechatchila, the Rabbanut is writing it, they have a system that's set up where the bread is being delivered to many, many restaurants, and they say we don't really have a tracking to know where this bread originated. That's what it says. Whoever wants to see is welcome to take it, read the Hebrew. So they say, and then at the end of it, that's the part that got me. Then at the end of it says, Nismach lekabel hatzaot lepitronot hashgachat nosafot betchum ze minintunei ha'hechsher. We would very much appreciate if different hechsherim would, you know, give us some pointers. How do they think we could fix this problem? And it's like, this is what bothers me with that particular heksha. The heksha is built backwards. The way it should work is, I want to get fresh pita from the shuk. I have a restaurant. I want yashkacha. So we know where the shuk bakery is. It has a heksha that's acceptable. And we know where your bakery is. We're giving you a heksha. So now we have to get from point A to point B and not lose the kashrus integrity. What do? The answer is, how about a sealed box with a piece of tape? How about a bag with a piece of tape? We're not talking major investments. We're not talking into a multi-million dollar infrastructure. We're talking about minimal effort. And yet, it doesn't happen. So you have the Rabbanut saying in its own bulletin to Mashkichim, please be aware and you have to be extra careful because the pita used in our restaurants, we have no idea where they're coming from. It's really not a good thing and we should really try to fix this. I didn't write that. So that tells you where they're at. You know, they have another one came out this week. I was debating on the way here if I should say which restaurants I decided not to, but sorry. So they pulled off the shelf this week. Again, it boggles the mind, really. They pulled off the shelf. I have two of the same one and not one I want. It's an alcoholic beverage. Cinzano, is that the name of the company? I don't know. Yeah. And I'm not familiar with these things. They pulled it off the shelf. They found it in 4 Mahadran restaurants in Yerushalayim. Well, Hashem, they found it and they pulled it off, so you got to thank God for big things. It happens to be an alcoholic beverage that contains treif wine. So if you're looking at the beverage, I believe it's clear if I remember correctly. If you look at it, you wouldn't think in terms of wine. Again, it's absurd. How does it work? A guy, the restaurant manager, wants to bring a new bottle of wine, a liquor, whiskey, a schnapps, who cares? For that matter, a can of tomatoes, I don't care. You want to buy from a new manufacturer, you want to bring in a new brand, what should you do? You go to the mashgiach asks them if akach, is this permitted? Yes or no? Or like the OU has a list. These are all the things you can use. Anything that's not in this list, you must ask. They give a restaurant gets a written list. It's not that complicated. But instead, they're writing here on themselves. They're writing, we found this, it has treif wine, it's really bad, please take it off the shelf. Why do you let a Mahadran restaurant use this stuff for as much time as it's been in there, and then someone periodically makes the rounds, and he sees this, the whiskey expert, and he says, wow, not good. And then they start calling around, pulling it off the shelves. In the meantime, people have been drinking whiskey with treif wine. Well, a few months ago, they pulled off another bottle, and from a Fleishik restaurant, they found out it's milchigs, it's chalavi. But the guy's Israeli, he can't read a word of English. He brought it in. He looked at it. It's something that, for whatever reason, he knows the clientele would like it. He shows it to the mashgiach. He doesn't have a clue. So they use it until someone says, don't use it. That's not the way to run a kashrus. And that's the kind of thing that's going on. I don't think in your house you would say, I don't know, do you know if this is kosher, dear? No, I don't. Let's buy it and see if someone comes over to eat and says, whoa, you have that? I can't eat here. That's exactly what they're doing. And people are saying, wow, that's great. Now, over the weekend, some women told me a story about a restaurant in this community has a badat hechsher, not eid charedit, and they had salads with whole cashews, and they said, wow, cashews, we remember learning, are infested, categorized under the infested nuts, and you have to open them and check. So they pulled out the cashews from the salad, opened them, and said, wow, look, bug one, bug two. Look at that. What do you do? Ultimately, whatever you want to eat is up to you. You're your own mashgiach, and it's your decision, and we like eating out. Eating out has become a social thing as well. It's part of what we do in life. I don't think kashrus demands not eating out, but I think kashrus demands consumer smarts and empowerment and deciding to say no. The example I give, and I probably need to come up with a new example. It's worn itself out, but it's true. If you're into eating healthier and you go and you buy organic vegetables, for example, and you're buying organic bell peppers, paying considerably more for such a product, and after a few months of shopping, finding out that you see the guy from the pepper store, before he opens, he runs to the shuk and buys like crates of peppers and brings them to the store and just charges you 50% more and says they're organic. You would not be a happy customer because you're being ripped off. So why would I be any less happy if I find out he's telling me about a certain level of kashrus and you don't get it? And this is much worse. The organic, your insult. You've insulted your pride, your bank book, I guess your health as well. You've eaten something, you feel compromised your health. And here you have, you're compromising your neshama. I mean, you think you're eating something. The sale point, everyone eats there, that's long worn itself out. Everyone doesn't know, I don't know who everyone is, but if everyone, however a firm person looks to you, you'll find them at every restaurant. I can show you a place in the Chov Yafo. Baruch Hashem has excellent business. Everyone does eat there. With a kippah sugah and with a kapata and litvish and chasidish, they're all sitting down drinking coffee. The guy hasn't had a hashkoch in his life, not from day one, not from the rabbanut, not from any badats. The owners of Mechal Shabbos, there's not a fum Jew in the store, and everyone eats there. Because on the store sign it says, Behechsha badats. There is no hashkoch called badats. Badats is a Rosh HaTevus, it's an abbreviation. It means Beis Din Tzedek. That's like saying, I live in a state. What state? I live in America. You know, what state? State. I don't know. Just, you have to know what you're talking about. And these guys are playing on the naivete and the ignorance of the consumers. And people are going for it. The biggest sell is, you know, I've worked with Badatsim, unfortunately. They're sloppy, okay? There's a store in the Shuk, for those that can picture the Shuk, on Machane Yehuda Street, which is the open street, and Agrippus. There's a large store, Moreno Nuts. I've shown slides of it. About 35 to 40% of the stores, pitzuchim and peyot yevashim, nuts, seeds, and dried fruit. And about 60 to 70% of the stores, candies. And amazingly, because the majority of the stores sells loose candies, if you look at Hashem, they're all legitimate. He has a Rabbanut Heksha, and a Bedatz Beit Yosef Heksha, and a Bells Heksha. And all three say, the Hashkoch is on the pitzuchim, peyot yevashim, milvad. That means the nuts, the seeds, and the dried fruit. That means 70% of the store is not under our hashkacha. We take no responsibility for it. So for the real firm people, they pass the store and they see the sign. They say, wow, Shviba Datsun, let's eat. Most of the world doesn't even bother doing that. And maybe a handful even stops to read the sign, and it says, and it's in large fonts. It says, most of the stores not under Hashkacha. And you can go there any time of the day you like. And if you want to be one of those, I see the Fum people eat there, this is the place. Because the Fum is the homes are buying candy there. And to make it worse, and that's, I don't know how you prevent such a thing. If someone comes to your house, Shabbos is a guest, and they hand you a sealed plastic bag. You know, they have those machines that push it down and puts a sticky closure on it, so it's sealed. And the bag has the name of the store and the logo of the two badatsim on the bag. So why would you have a havamin, and why would you ever say, what's wrong with this? It said, you have an Ashkenazi badats, Sephardi badats. This is good for everybody. This is great. Well, in essence, it has no hashkacha from anybody. But you don't know that. So I've been yelling at the badatsim to not let him use these bags, for example, for the loose candy, because he's saying on the one hand there's no hashkacha, but they're taking these bags to the seminaries, to the schools. This is the stop for the seminary people that come from Chutz La'aretz. This is the place, and the yeshiva guys. They go in there, they load up kilos, I mean literally kilos of stuff. There's no hashkacha on anything from any agency, and everyone's buying. It's an example. So you can't be what my neighbor does, and it can't be he eats there, and it has to be based on first-hand knowledge or second-hand knowledge from your neighbor who you know does due diligence, and the person knows how they're checking, knows what they're doing. You know, you look at the newspapers, they're full of ads. Now probably already, still Sukkot, we're already getting into Pesach. Hotels are being kashered all over the country, everything's Badats, Mahadran, they will tell you the name of the chef. I look at websites today. It's amazing the level it's gone to in Chutz La'aretz. They tell you the name of the chef, and they show you the guy with his jacket on, and he was a sushi chef in Europe, and he did a stage over here and a resident over there. It's an amazing thing. They tell you about the swimming pool. They tell you about the tennis courts. And then they write at the end, Glatt Kosher. Everyone says, oh, it's Glatt. Let's go. You don't know a thing about it. Everything there has like a whole page on the web. And the last thing about the kosher is Glatt Kosher 24-hour-based medrash. That's in one sentence. Everyone's going. Who's the kosher? I don't know. Well, look, it says the guy's name. Yechiel Spiro Shlita. I said, what are they going to write? They're not going to write Yechiel Spiro con artist. They're going to write Shlita, because Shlita sells tickets. People take reservations. Shlita, you know, do you ever hear of the guy? No. Do you know who he is? No. Could be the hotel manager's brother-in-law. You have no idea who the guy is. It really is. That's how some of the places are that brazen. If you think I'm kidding, they really are. They get a rav, they pay him a few a few hundred bucks. They say, can we put your name down? He said, why not? And if it's a really good deal, he'll get to bring his family for Yontif as well. All right. When you go down there, when he's supposed to be kashering the kitchen, there's not a soul in there. No one's watching the kashering. No one's watching the heating. No one's watching what goes on in Shabbos, or even the better, what shouldn't be going on that's going on. You need to find out before you go away. You need to look into things. And it can be in any newspaper, by the way. I'm not talking about, you know, it could be Torah Tidbits, and it could be the Haredi Hamivaseh. It's the same difference. I see the same ads in all the papers. Go to Europe, go to Italy, go to Switzerland. Go anywhere you like. Go to Eretz Yisrael. The whole world is Glatt Mahadran. You know, when I speak to Rabbanim who really do know, if you know anything about Shechita of Behema Gassas, like cattle Shechita, they say on a good day, on a great Shechita, if they walked away with 25 to 30%, there's like a major success of 30% Glatt. Where do you think all this Glatt meat's coming from? There isn't enough Glatt in the world for all these Glatt places, but everyone's advertising and everyone's eating because it's Mahadran. And then they come, my friend told me I shouldn't go here. What do you think? I don't know. I can't tell people on the phone. I've pretty much all but stopped answering anyone anymore because, A, I don't know anyone. Most of the people I don't know. So I don't know your own life. The Rabbonim explained to me. You don't know the person's lifestyle. You don't know where he's at, what his chumas are, what his kulas are. You also don't know his finances. Sometimes a wealthy person who really knows, you say, you can afford another 2 shekels a kilo, buy the better chicken. You don't have to be down on the baseline. It's not for me to say, so I don't say anymore. And people get upset. Someone just spoke to me this week. Are you not telling me because you know and it's bad, you don't want to say it? Or are you not telling me because, you know, it's just you're scared to tell me? And I said, no, I'm not telling you because I don't have a clue who you are. I don't have a clue what you eat the rest of the week. I don't know what you eat all year. Why would I tell you what to eat on Yontif? I don't know you from anywhere. You know, so I don't know where to go with it. I will answer one thing because people ask it a lot and it probably impacts the community like this. People say, I eat all you in America. Can I eat it here? I don't see why not. If you eat all you eat all you. You trust the same hashkacha. It's the same Rav Belsky and Rav Schechter, the same poskim for America as they are here. A few years ago, one of my articles was against the OU. I will say since then, they've changed dramatically for the better. So if you eat OU, eat OU. That's the answer for the OU one. You know, and if people say this restaurant's Rabbi Reuben, Bell's, Rabbi Landau, Beis Yosef, Rabbi Machpud, whoever you want to put in there, can I eat there? I said, do you normally eat that extra? Yes. Okay, so you answered your own question. You don't need me. And if you want to know what the answer is, what's the difference between Rabbi Machpud and Eder Chavedid or Beis Yosef or this, it's difficult. I spoke to a few Rabbanim, and we tried to put together something that resembled an Excel sheet. And you can't, because if everybody had the same 50 items on a list, and that's what Rabbi Kuba's master plan is, this is humongous booklet you'd have to fill out for this third-party supervision, which is outstanding, but until everyone looks at the same checklist, you can't make a spreadsheet. Because the chicken shchitas, so one does 12 a minute, one does 14. One checks the knife every 30 birds, one every 40. One guy comes out with 3 knives, one comes with 4 knives. One has one running water to clean a knife, one doesn't. But he has a different chumah he doesn't do. The coolers and chumahs change, so you can't compare one to another. All right, my attitude is, and I could get maybe yelled at by some abonim, but whoever invites me to speak knows I say what I say. All the Badass chickens from the moderate end are more or less the same as all the Badass chickens. They're all the same. They cut them open, they salt the inside, they salt the outside. One cuts off the wing tip, one cuts off the whole third digit. One has a special guy who cranks the pulka to see if there was a dislocation. One just looks at it. The point is they go through so many different checks and they've gone so above the straight Shulchan Aruch because they felt the times have changed. They're all fine. What you're getting at the end product, it's got to be a kosher chicken. And people ask me about Rabbaniyot. They're not all the same either, just like the Badatzim are. But if you eat a Rabbanut, then you trust the Rabbanut. I really mean it. All right? So it's not for me to say. There are differences. I showed you last year the slides. We did, I think, over 2 or 3 sessions, the slides. I'm not getting into that now. The point is, it's not about, you shouldn't get to the point on the one hand where you second guess everyone, because you can't live that way. It's ridiculous. Like people say to me, well, how do I know? When I show the young folks, when I used to lecture, I stopped lecturing too as a result of not wanting to answer questions. Except Rabbi Milinowitz, can't say no. But they say, when I look at it too, that, how do I know if it's legitimate? And I said, it's a fair question today, because with the digital printers available and the color and everything else, you could put out a Tudah. So some have holograms. I imagine it won't be long till people find an inexpensive way to fake a hologram too. Or even if you faked it, I would dare say if I put a sheet in front of most of you and I'll give you a list of 10 Ashkochas and ask you which ones have a hologram on the Tudah, which don't, most wouldn't know. Meaning if a hologram's missing, it wouldn't make a difference because you wouldn't know it belongs there. So my response was, and I think it's a fair response, your initial look, if it looks legitimate, it's legitimate. I can take out a 20 shekel note. Is it counterfeit? I don't know. Same thing with counterfeit. Looks real, feels real, it's real. Halacha doesn't demand that we go out of our minds to determine the legitimacy of something. So if you look at it, this is not a duplicate, this is not a photocopy, that's the end of it. You check the date, you check the name of the store, it's fine. You don't need to do more than that. What we need to do is not when you get to the store, you need to do your homework at home conceptually. You need to consult with the Rabbanim, whatever shul you go to, whoever it is you ask your shilas to. And you say, Rabbi, this neighborhood has some of the Hashem that I know are in Beit Shemesh, Ramat Beit Shemesh, or the Rabbanut, regular Menhadrin, Bedatz Beit Yosef, Bedatz Yerudea. You have here Chasam Sofer, I think B'nai Brak, I'm not sure if it was Petach Tikva, but I think B'nai Brak. You have B'nai Tzion, there's a big array, Eder Chavedit, Rav Reuben. There's quite a few Hashkochas operating within your city limits. So you need to say to your Rabbi, you know me, you know what I try to be, you know what level we're at, where can I eat, where shouldn't I eat? That's the end of it. If you don't remember the names, take off my website. Anyone's willing, anything you want off the website, for non-commercial use, take what you want. Free, pass it around, copy it, whatever you want. Make copies of what the pictures of the Tudah look like and carry it in your pocket. Take one sheet, put 4, 5, 6 on it, and keep it in your pocket. That's all you need to do. Get this concept out of your mind that you can eat anyway, because you can't. All right? I told you the story last year, I'll repeat it. Last year, I pulled the guy out of a store in the Chova Grippus. A guy, for some reason, Hashem decided to tell me, I don't do these kinds of things normally, but I saw a guy who looked like he didn't belong there. I went in, he's wearing a kippah, sugah, and I started talking to him. It was clear to me he didn't understand Hebrew. I spoke to him in English, and his bottom line is he came to buy a few slices of salami. I said, this is a pork store. He couldn't believe it. He said, this is Yerushalayim, it's the shuk. I said, right. And I said, and you see all the Russian writing on the deli? When you see Russian, think pork. That's the rule of thumb, unless you have Ashkocha. They said, no, it's true. It's not a reality. There's nothing you can do. Unfortunately now, Achman Alitzlan, in the area of Agrippus, Ben Yehuda, Yafo, Hillel, Shammai, like the Shuk Triangle area there. There's, I can think of at least four or five stores that sell pork products. There's a growing trend. It was written about in Haaretz and the Jerusalem Post. There's a growing trend in Yerushalayim now also about stores that just say, we're kosher. You know, ask them or say, yes, we're kosher, you can trust us. And there's no hashgacha from anyone, not the rabbinate either. The rabbinate's trying to fight it. They're not doing well because unless you hang up a sign that says kosher by state kosher law, you can do what you want. So I can open up a store here in Yerushalayim and it can branch out all over the country and I can tell clients whatever I want. I'm not advertising it's kosher on the sign. It doesn't say the word kosher anywhere. I don't need a 2-dot kosher from anybody. Okay, and for those that are bold enough, and some do, they play around with the law too. I don't believe they've amended the law. You can also write Mahadrin. You can write a lot of words. Just don't write kosher. The law, which is an antiquated law, which is long should have been amended, is not being amended for a simple reason. The real frumis in Knesset, like Agudas Yisrael and Shas, they don't eat rabbanut anyway. They don't care. And the guys that eat rabbanut, the Dati Lumi parties, Bayit HaYud, Yichud Lumi, whatever it is, they don't have the power to change it. So the law stays the way it is. And it's this endless loophole of this dysfunctional kashrus in the state of Israel. People ask me, what does it mean when it says, be sure rabbanut reshit Yisrael, when you see a product that's imported and it has the approval of the chief rabbin of Israel? The system is, if it's a, look, I'll tell you, we'll go the bizarre way first, okay? There are many items that have an OU, which is known to be a fairly respectable heksher. Again, it may not be suitable for everyone, but it's definitely respectable. And if you can't eat OU, if you can't trust the OU, then the world of kashrus isn't a big problem. All right, but yet there's many, many products that have an OU on them that the rabbinate will not permit into the country. And yet again, you may see stuff from unknown names, and they have an issue. Triangle K has an approval from the rabbinate. The rabbinate has signed now a deal with other companies as well. You may frown on some, you may like some, I'm not here to rate them. The point is, an issue rabbinate, first of all, it's generally not firsthand. The rabbinate lacks the manpower. If you believe the rabbinate is sending someone to whatever country it is, or to the factory where it's being manufactured, or even to the office of the heksher in whatever country they're getting hashgacha from, they're not. They're basically writing to a company and saying, please send us some kind of documentation to validate their kosher claim. And if they validate it, they say it. We give an issue if it meets their standards. For example, when I said they won't let certain things from the OU in is, I believe they used to have, if they still have, the OU used to have a tuna fish with a dairy designation on it. That's not allowed into the country. Or the ice cream last year, remember, there was a big thing. They were yelling, take the Haagen-Dazs. There was a panic. People in Beit Shemesh called me, why are they taking the Haagen-Dazs out of the stores? It's not treif. I said, no, it's not treif. If you eat stam, chalavakam, whatever you want to call it, they'll... The rabbinut allows the importation of products with powdered chalavakam, but not liquid chalavakam. That's why you have a large array of chocolates from around the world that say, Lachle Cholav Akum or Cholav Stam Bilvad, meaning if you eat powdered, non-Cholav Yisrael powdered milk, it's fine. If you don't, you can't eat it. They won't, chocolate is generally not made with liquid milk, it's made with powdered milk. Ice cream, on the other hand, is generally made with liquid milk, and that is against the Rabbanut's rule book, so it won't let it into the country. So if you don't understand why, everyone says that's just politics. There's a lot of politics too, but legitimately there's certain rules that they try to adhere to. But the rabbinate import division has fallen apart, and it's not what it used to be. You know, it's just not where it's at. It's not where it used to be. So unless you, what the Torah Tidbits advertises every now and then, if you're an avid reader, I think they put out alerts several times a year. They say you must see the original hashgacha. You can't rely on the sticky Hebrew label. The annoying label that always covers up the instructions how to prepare something. That label, you should never rely on the stick-on label itself. The reason being that the Kashrus Enforcement Division in Israel consists of three people for the entire country, for the entire state. So the chances of them catching something is very nil. So what often some people that aren't legitimate and don't care, they'll just smack a label onto something when it comes, an imported product. They'll put on whatever heck they think they, Stark, OK, OU, whatever they think of that week, and they'll put it out in the marketplace and sell it. And it has no hashgacha from anyone. But they'll put it out there, and people say, wow, Star K, bingo. And they buy it. So the Star K, the OU, the OK, all the Hashem basically say, don't rely only on a stick-on label. Please look for the original hashgacha on the print. There are exceptions. So you have to be aware there are exceptions, but that's the general rule. And unless you're into kashrus enough to know what the exceptions are, you're just better off following the rule. You can always access, for those that have smartphones, you can download today programs from like the OK, the OU, Kosher Quest. There's different people put some out. Some are free, some they pay for. You can get some answers that way. The best thing is to just, if you can, today's technology makes life simpler. It won't give you an instant solution. Photograph an item in the store and email it to the kashrus agency, and you will get an answer if you need an imported product, and you'll know. But the nation is inundated today with imports. It's not like it used to be. Okay, and the levels of, there's inyanim of chadash and yashan for wheat products at this time of the year. There's issues with plain, simple kashrus. There's issues for chalav Yisrael or chalav Akum, if that's important to you. There's inyan of a lot of things. Of Bishul Yisrael and Bishul Akum, you have to know which hechshevim give you what. All right, we're not going into the concepts tonight, but I'm trying to just throw some basic terms out for you to understand what is there to worry about. Or people say to me, I want to go out to this restaurant, it's dairy, what could be wrong? Almost, except for non-kosher shechita, which you have in a meat place, everything else that could be wrong in a meat place could be wrong in a dairy place. The fish could be non-kosher, the vegetables could be full of bugs, the wine could be treif that they're making the wine sauce with. The goy could have lit the gas. I mean, there's the same differences in meat and dairy. There's a lot to worry about. So, well, I'm going to a vegetarian restaurant, what could be wrong? As far as today, where the Rabbanim, and this is across the board, including the Rabbanut, they say you can only use the controlled greens that were controlled to keep the bugs out, and legumes, kidney would have to be checked. So even a vegetarian restaurant is not safe. And there's always the issues in Eretz Yisrael of Chumo, Masa, and Ola. Okay? Again, the more you know, the truth is, the easier it is to be makel, to be lenient, because knowing empowers you. It also gives you, there's charts that are put out periodically, for example, how much Ola there is in the market for certain fruits, like how much tangerines, clementino, in this zana, this kind of a plum, and that kind of a plum, the little guys, the yellow guys, the red guys. And Rav Efrati, for example, he puts out charts before the summer, during the summer. And they'll say that there's like a 0.5% chance of oil in the whole marketplace. And Rabban will say, you know, it's not a miyut matzoi. It's such an infinitesimal amount. You don't have to worry. So anytime if you go to a main place, shopping in the system, meaning like a supermarket or the shuk, you could buy. You don't have to worry about it. That never ever covers when you're driving like to Beit Shan and you're going up north and a guy on the side of the road is selling a box of something. None of that covers any of these things. Not a boutique sale or off-the-road sale, but it means generally a supermarket in the system. For example, if you read the Kashrus Guide last year, perfect example, it's written in there. Again, it may have changed since last year. I'm quoting a year-old information, but the Mashkiach in the Kimat Chinam supermarket in Beit Shemesh, the guy is a tzaddik. I was trying to dissuade him not to write what he wanted me to write because I was scared I'll lose his job. He said, no, write it. In the end, I brought it to the store. I showed it to him in Hebrew. I made him sign the approval because if he got fired, I didn't want to have him yelling later. I didn't tell him. And he signed. He said, I told you, write it. So here's a place. The store opens, I don't know when. He works till 4 o'clock. Let's say it opens 8 or 9. I have no idea. This man, I don't think he goes to the restroom during the course of the day. He's so diligent and he checks and he's so nervous. He's the only guy there. And he's a Yerush Shemaim. He cares and he wants to do everything he can. And he says, I can't. You know, it's the meat department, the dairy department, the chamutzim, you know, the olives, pickles. There's so much going on in that supermarket, but he tries his best. And then he says, I go home at 4. The place, at the end of the week at least, I remember, Wednesday, Thursday, operates till 11. That's 7 hours. For 7 hours, he said, there's one person at the meat department. He's a goy. That's it. So you have a piece of meat, there's a plumber on it. I come in, I want the half. I took the half of the plumber. Now you got a piece with no sim on him. It's very common. And a goy at the showcase, al pi halach, you're not allowed to touch that meat anymore. That's basar shemit alei me'ayin. There's no heta for that meat. And he said it. And that's true. It's pashut shulchan aruch. And people are buying and buying. And how's it going to stop when people stop buying? I go to the store. I looked at him. I called the mashgiach over. I said, I don't understand it. Here was the table with the meat. And here was the table with the cheese cutter where they cut cheese. You could just about get a piece of paper in between the two tables. No mechitza, no partition. Here he's slicing meat. Here he's slicing cheese. One's on top of the other. Mashkiach said, I've yelled at the store dozens of times. Stop it. Take it away. No, they don't do it. Why a rabbanut doesn't yank a heksha from a place like that, I don't understand it. I can't give you an explanation. I don't get it. And why a consumer, who you know how to separate meat and milk, comes to a store and you see he's slicing the American cheese. You see the little crumbs flying. He's about as close to the table as the microphone. He's cutting meat, and no one seems bothered by it. So as long as no one's going to complain, everyone's going to shop, the store's saving money, you can have one mashgiach who cares, who can't do his job properly, and everyone's happy. I don't know what to tell you. At some point, people have to take responsibility for it, go into a store and say, I need to see Hashgacha. I need to see why is this, why is that. It doesn't make sense. Ask someone. Okay, we've been kosher, some our whole life, some for many years, some are each one a different place. But trust yourself enough. You know what you're talking about. Just because you may be less fluent in Hebrew than you were in English, or other people are buying it, if something tells you it's wrong, it's wrong. You know, when you see olive oil for sale, if you know the whole country sells olive oil for 45 to 60 shekels a liter, and this guy's selling olive oil for 25 shekels, as Rav Shmuel Elio says, it looks like it's too good to be true. It's too good to be true. Don't buy it. The chances of that being olive oil are slim to none. So A, you're getting ripped off. You're not getting olive oil. B, it's some kind of other oil mixed with water, with emulsifiers to make it all bind together. Is there any kashrus? When things are obviously don't look right, you got to stop and double check. And you got to wonder. And we have to learn to come to these, you have to reach an area of comfort, your kashrus comfort zone at home before you go shopping, before you go out to eat, before you book the hotel. And that requires a bit of work, perhaps, a bit of research, a bit of sitting down with a rabbi, or just saying, at least, the very, very least, whatever Hashgacha is going to eat, and if you decide to eat everything out there, that's what you'll decide, at least learn how to differentiate a bogus tudah from a real tudah. That's the bottom line. All right? And you do need to go, and the Jerusalem Kosher News website offers you that. I forget what it's called. On the homepage on the right side, there's a few different pages. I think it's called Unauthorized Tudot or something like that. When I say something's unauthorized, that's not me saying it. It's from the chief rabbi of Israel. All right. Sometimes it's a political reason, admittedly, that they make their decision. I'm not getting into why. But more often than not, they're saying it because the Hashgacha is bogus. It doesn't give kashrus. All right. So if you go to Yerushalayim, for example, and you see a Keter Kashrut Tudah up next to a Rabbanut. So the Rabbanut's regular. Next to it says Keter Kashrut. And it says Mahadrim and Mahadrin, Api Beit Yosef, Shechit Erish. It looks great. You expect to see Moshe Rabbeinu to come out of the kitchen any second and to serve you to dinner. It's a bogus sign. The guy comes around and collects money every 3 months. He doesn't add any kashrus to it. There's no mashkiach. It's a no-show. It's a scam. And yet everyone eats from it because it's a great sign. It has all the right key buzzwords in there. Mahadrin, Beis Yosef. It's got everything covered. And everyone eats there. Wow, he's from. He eats in there. I can eat there. And at the end of the day, it's a scam. The Rabbanut tries to get rid of these things. Rabbi Schlossiger, the Rav Posek, over the years has had great strides in it, and now they're coming back again. I don't know if he's tired. I don't know if he's slowly they're going to get back into it. I don't know what they're going to do. All right? But there's a lot going on. This city seems to be Baruch Hashem. Here you had, I think, the rabbi told me there were 880 restaurants on the Rabbanut Beis Shemesh last year, 80, 85, something like that. All right? Yerushalayim has somewhere between 800 and 900. It shouldn't make a difference because if each one has a mashkiach, the way it should, it's proportionate. It should work out one mashkiach per X amount of restaurants. It should make, in my mind, it doesn't matter if you had 2,000, it should work. But it's not working the way it should. So, and by the way, it's not about beating on the Rabbanut. Some of the Badatzim have gotten very sloppy, very lazy, and they're not doing their jobs properly, and people are eating because it says the word Badatz. So, and it's not about Ashkenazi versus Sephardi. It happens to be you got equal followership going on all sides of the board. You need to educate yourself. You need to find what you can eat. You need to find out what works for you and start from there. And that's mamish, the basis, the starting point. And that's the message I'm trying to just give tonight is do the work at home first. Get your place at least to know what's acceptable, what isn't. And then you've reached at least a starting point of where you're going to go. Anyone have any questions? Yeah. Right. Papagayo, correct. To the best of my knowledge, the shkita hasn't changed. The tovo l'ra, for better or worse. So that's why I said, if you eat OU, you trust the OU. As far as Ashkocha in restaurants in Eretz Yisrael, it has changed for the better dramatically. And everything I wrote about then has been eliminated and changed and fixed. They did a tikkun, I have to say. And And I would also say the Rav HaMachshir today is a young man, Rabbi Krakowski, who I personally feel is a Yir Shemayim, and he would only tell you the truth, even if it wasn't always going to make him look good. So, and he's accessible. You can call and ask and explain, this is what you eat, this is what you want, he'll tell you. Okay. That's his subjective opinion. But, all right. I don't know. The basis is you asked a good question. I should have mentioned it. You have to assume, again, I did mention it, but not directly. You say good when I said a heksher is legitimate or suitable. So a good heksher, which means he does what he says they're going to do. Right now, I believe they do. It's my opinion. Is it suitable? I can't say for you. You have to then find out what's the oyushchita. And how many do they shech? Does the oyushchita fall into the category of rabbanut? Or does the oyush category fall into the badats? If you ask Rabbi Krakowski, he'll tell you badats. I know that. I disagree with him on that. So do my rabbanim, so at least I can say it's not just me. And I'm not telling you to eat it or not. Again, you have to decide what your baseline is. It's not for me to say. But I know I can't say I've seen their shechita firsthand. It's one of the other that happened because they won't let me come to the shechita place. I've tried. I've tried to come with your rabbi. I've tried to go with other rabbanim. Since I wrote that article, I'm not allowed to get in there anymore. So I can't tell you firsthand. I can tell you from people I trust and rabbanim who have seen it firsthand, they say that it's still rabbanut. So there's a machlokas. You can either go by the OU or go by someone else. That's an issue you have to decide upon. Yeah. That's my opinion. With everybody else. That's my opinion. Not everyone agrees. Some people say, I'm an Amma Oretz. I don't know what I'm talking about. I'll tell you that now too. Like I said, my opinion I don't think should be your decisive factor. Look, the Eidah Chavedit is very simple. Eidah Chavedit takes Shulchan Aruch. And I believe Rav Landau does too, but and Rav Rubin, but stay with the Eidah Chavedit. It's the Vatik, it's the established, well-known. Eidah Chavedit took Shulchan Aruch and applies it. And they don't say, wow, if we're going to do it this way, it's going to get so costly, it's going to cost another 30%. What are we going to do? They say, if you want to have it, this is what it's going to cost. You want to pay the extra 30%, fine. If not, buy something else. It's a different shita. The way they look at the operation is different. Whether it's the speed of shita, of checking the knives, the frequency, whether it's picking the shochtim, the kind of people they're willing to work with. One example, the Eidah Chavedit pays the shochtim by the day. Okay? Mamash, in 1 minute, it's easy to understand. If a shochet comes in, let's say I get 500 shekels for the day. So it doesn't matter. I killed 11 a minute, 12 a minute, 10 a minute. I'm getting what I need. So let me do my work. I'm cool. At the end of the day, I know how much I'm getting. The other hashkachas, many of them pay them by the bird. So that's already an incentive. Work faster, work faster. But kashrus, the shechita says, work slower, work slower. So that just the fact that they're paying a shochet, a global sum, as they call it here, by the day, puts them into a different level. It's not alone that. It's everything with it. All right? And it's not because they're there in Me'er She'orim. Again, I get very, it pains me when people try to trivialize it to the point where they think, you know, a year ago the beard was shorter, now it's longer. It has nothing to do with any of that. It has nothing to do with any of the stuff with Tzion Nut. Yes or no, it has to do with eating culture. All right? And it doesn't matter if you came for Eretz Yisrael, Medina Yisrael. It doesn't matter if any of that. It has to do if you want culture. Right? There is a machlokis, and you have to take sides. You can't remain pav. Like anything worthwhile in life, you have to make a decision. You don't get to live on the line. All right, like we explained last year, the Rabbanut says that the old way of shechting birds is good enough. Not good enough, it's good. They're not saying good enough. They're saying this is proper, you're getting a kosher bird according to Shulchan Aruch. And the rest of the world, meaning the Badatz world, they're saying because the realities have changed, the way the chickens are raised and force-fed and killed at a younger age and squashed into coops and the legs and palms with all the different ligaments, the percentages of the Tzomet HaGidin, is the torn ligament is increased, the percentage of all kinds of palms have increased, and all these things, according to Shulchan Aruch, can potentially trafe the bird up. And they said, as a result, we can't just take Shulchan Aruch dry the way it used to be. We have to implement a new way of doing shechita with different stringencies. The actual shechita is the same. All right? And the whole world is mulled of Rabbanut. So if you're saying, I trust the Rabbanut and this works for me, then that's fine. If you don't, then you go to the other side. And that's something you have to decide. There's nothing you can do with it. If you hold that, if a guy puts a spiral coil, heating coil into an oven, and they flip a switch and a 2,000 or 2,000 watt bulb is sitting there all day on, and then Ahmed comes and lights the oven and makes the bread, or whatever else they're cooking, that to you is pas yisrael, because you accept the heter that says the spiral coil is on all the time, there's always heat. So Achmed turning the oven on makes no difference, that's pas yisrael. And the other guy says, what are you talking about? That spiral coil can be on for 6 months, you put the bread in there, it's never going to bake a piece of bread. Yes, it generates heat, but it doesn't have potential of baking bread. So how would I rely on that heter? But there are hashem that rely on that heter. There are hashem that don't rely on the heter. These are things you need to know. Right? So they're not all equal. It's not just about what coat or hat or payas they do or don't have. It's about the way they apply Shulchan Aruch to standards of kosher. We have to be... The only way we ever have hope of changing anything is by the tzibur coming out and starting to ask questions, respectfully and properly. And if you don't have the wherewithal, I told people, some people wanted to know to go away, what did it do? I told them, very simple. Go to the hotel, call the hotel, find out the name of the Rav, who's generally the head mashgiach. Go there if you can, get a picture of the Zuta. Go to your Rav, send him the information, and let your rabbi ask the questions for you. You don't have to necessarily go to school, take a mashgiach course now, learn what questions to ask. But you need to do the homework and then bring the information to a Rav who knows what's going on. Ask him to please interpret this and tell me, can I go here or not? That's all. Yeah. Yeah. Why what? Why would I hold of it? I know the Ada does not. I don't know what they do. Why do I hold of it? Because I also know... I know what else they... The Ada I know for a fact pays by the day. Let's assume they pay by the bird, but I also know how they work. I know what they do. I know what goes on there. And I know the speed and the shochtim. The end of the day with shechita or tefillin, go back to the tefillin we mentioned before, the Yirah Shemayim with the shochet and the batimacha and the haga'ah, they get the sofus checking tefillin. No one knows but him and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you have to hope, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, medavening Rosh Hashanah, that these guys are good shlichim. You got to hope that they send the guy with enough Yirah Shemayim when he's not sure that I shecht right or wrong, and he knows the guy says, if I parcel one more chicken, I'm out of here. He's going to throw it away anyway. You hope. You write, there's something you got to daven for. There's the Gemara teaches us in Chulin the different psilas for shechita, and only the shochet himself could feel it, what he does with his knife. So that's one of the things people are concerned with. Who's the shochet? And then there's other people. Rav Landau insists they go to mikveh every day, for example. Some people may laugh. What do I care? If it's important to your way of life, it's important. Okay, if it's not, it's not. So you don't need that. But I'm saying that's why it's difficult to come up with that spreadsheet again, because it's hard to know. You know, I speak to mashgichim a lot more than the last year and a half before, but I go to the Far East and to Yenemsveld to do factories and all this stuff. It's a very difficult industry. The best of them are relying on a lot of heterim. Am Yisrael has gotten to the point we feel we need to eat a lot of food and we have to have a lot available. And some hashgachas say we'll accommodate you to a point and then live without it. Other hashgachas will say, Herek Val Yavo, we'll get you the product. And you have to find your place where it fits for your lifestyle. Yes? Rav Auerbach is a Rabbanu chicken, so make it clear here. That's also one of the questions you mentioned. Rav Rubin, Rav Landau is one thing. Rav Auerbach is a big Talmud Chacham, the Av Bezdin of Tveria. But his chickens are Rav Auerbach, Rav Ariel, Rav Drori, Rav, who else can I think of now? Rav Shlush. All these names, they're all Rabbanu chickens. All right? Ravina Werner from Chadera. Absolutely not. They're not on their best day. They're not even at the shoestrings of the Eidah Haredit. They will argue, but again, I don't know. Put the three in any order you want. I'm not going to say one, two, and three. If I had to say one, I'll say it's the Eidah Haredit, and the rest of the world falls behind. The Eidah Haredit is uncompromising. As good as the kashrus will get in the world, where food is mass produced, many times off site, many times on site. Some stuff by remote control. It's a food industry that I'm only learning, beginning to learn the quantity and the speed and the production. It's awesome. So in that complex world of having to give Ashkach, I still believe the Eidah Haredit does the best they can. Do they not make mistakes? 100% they do. Someone asked me the other day, there's no politics there. I said, there's more politics than we want to know. But as the Rabbonim explained to me, not from the Eidah Haredit, Rabbonim who I've come to trust, who really are experts, they said the difference from the Eidah Haredit is, and other Hechsherim is, the Eidah Haredit has its politics, the Eidah Haredit has like everyone else. It's a business. There's money, there's personalities, we're human beings. We all have Yetzer Hara too. But at the end of the day, the Eidah Haredit, they may mess up in Adam L'Chaveh, where that's between themselves, whatever goes on with their staff and their companies and their clients. But ben adam lamakom, they have enough Yerushalayim, they will never put a product in the marketplace with their stamp. That's not kosher. That shouldn't be out there. And that's the difference. Right, and I know a few cases where the imamish did recalls quietly and no one knew about it, and they people ate enormous amounts of money because of a mistake that was made. The product was no good, and the rabbanim, there's nothing to talk about. Kashrus, the end of the day, that's they're talking about the olam haba. Olam haba is one thing. Business is another thing. And B'ch Hashem, I've seen they hold to that. So that's the standard. Yes, we have to wrap up because I have a vehicle coming. Yeah. I don't know. The Rabbanut is a large organization. The Rabbanut, in my opinion, over the years, as I've come to the understanding, originally when the system was developed, I think it was an outstanding idea, but the realities of the State of Israel today are such that it's an organization that doesn't have an ability to adhere to its own guidelines. As they define it, not how I define it. But that has the fraud and issues, that all every fraud you mean in which way? That something gets mismarked as kosher? That, no, I would say the difference is you can't. There's too many checks and balances in a proper system like an Eidah Haredit. There's too many people. The thing with the Rabbanut could have been very easily avoided if the Mashkiach would have called and checked. That's the most basic thing a Mashkiach should have done. Call the store, send me a copy of the bill of lading, let me see a piece of paper. I know, but I'm saying if you have a chain of command and people are doing their jobs, one would have double-checked the others, checks and balances. But here it was nothing. And that's why never hundreds of people ate treif. Yes? According to the Rabbonim, obviously not. I don't think they would do them. What? Look, they open up. Let me just explain very quickly. They open up the chicken because there's mamish. This is not even a regular chod. This is like flying by. They open up the chicken because the inyan of salting inside and out to make sure salt gets at every part of the chicken. They say the chicken's closed. You can't. All right. They cut off the wing trips because there's points where coagulated blood is shulchan aruch, so you can't eat it. That's one of the spots that's frequently there. They eliminate this. What? Yes, coagulated blood isn't Shulchan Aruch. You're not supposed to eat blood that's coagulated. They're telling you how to kosher a chicken. So the Rabbanim have come to the realization. 1 second. You ask a question, let me answer. If you ask a question, if you want to hear the answer, you want to be argumentative. If you want to be argumentative, take the mic, come up here and talk. If you want to hear the answer, then be quiet and listen. That's the difference. I don't play the games. I'm not a Rav. I'm me. Okay? The answer is like this. They feel that the speed of the shechita and the production today is such that the old way we used to check for 1,000 years, where you throw salt on it, you go inside out. I remember my mother over salt and checked, used to salt, and I remember it. Have you seen the shechita house lately? I'll take you to the Beit Joseph one, which is infant. It's small. It's a baby shechita house, 18,000 a day. Do you know in Eretz Yisrael, 850,000 to 1 million chickens a day are shechted? If you watch how the salting is done, this is the salting. I just did 6 chickens. So they're saying it's not physically possible to salt the inside of a chicken anymore at the speed we're doing it. So how do we do it? If we slow it down, it'll cost a fortune. You can't do it. So the way they came up with is cut the chicken open, and now you have 2 sides, pancake, and it's much easier the salt gets in. He has a mound of salt this high. He goes like this. And it's a layer of white on both sides. You can't do that with a closed chicken. The Rabbanut disagrees. There's a lot of Talmidei Chachamim in the Rabbanut. That's their right to disagree. If it's Halacha L'Shem Shemayim, it's respectable. Now you as a person have to go to your Rav and say, this is A, this is B, what's good for me? That's all. And I don't think it's ridiculous either way. I think out of Rabbanut, there's people I would tell you one is not edible, the other one say this is absurd, a chumah, fine, that's it. Ask your Rav, but it should be asked for really wanting to understand it, not just say it's a ridiculous chumah. I don't think anything these guys are doing is far from ridiculous. Adarabah, they're sitting here. I've seen they're working to speed it up as much as possible to get the cost down. There's not a rich community, the Eidah Haredit community by and large. They're looking to do what they can do. This is reality. At the end of the day, though, they're saying this is the basic bottom line kosher. If you don't agree, that's fine. I started out saying it. There's a Rabbanut and there's a Badatzim. They're not all created equal. So we have to learn enough or have a Rav who's enough in the loop And I stress that too, because not every person has smicha. You still have to have derech eretz, a rav, a talmid chacham, but you have to, it has to be a rav that doesn't just know Yoredeya, it has to know kashrus and eretz Yisrael. There's a difference. Because you can learn Yoredeya and know it very well, mitzvah Hashem, but you have to know how is it applied in the marketplace and how the different kashriyot, the hashkochas, the bedatzim apply it to the food we're eating. And then you can reach a fair decision. Yes? The differences that I'm aware of, OU in Israel, the meat and everything is the same. The meat comes from South America. Although in many OU restaurants, you will land out eating different meats depending. For an example, often you will have in Papagayo, everyone likes Papagayo, you will often have Eda Chavedet steaks there because there's a portion of the cow Eda Chavedet doesn't use because the meat's too expensive for their tzibur. Their people don't buy those steaks, so they sell it to the OU. Does that mean every steak is OU? Is Eda Chavedet? Absolutely not. It means it could be. Okay, the chickens, they have their own chicken. I quote my Rabbanim for this. It's an opinion. The OU would be Cholek. They disagree. The chickens are Rabbanut. High-end Rabbanut, some say, but still Rabbanut, not Badats. OU says, no, they're Badats, and they're not only just as good, that they're better. So I'm giving you both sides. That's why we have rabbis to tell us. The OU in Eretz Yisrael doesn't have Chol of Akum in restaurants, only Chol of Yisrael, as opposed to Chutz La'aretz. And the OU in Eretz Yisrael, when Shemitah is applicable, is Shemitah L'chumra, which I think is now being adopted in America too, and the OU in Israel also has only Bishu Yisrael for Sfardim in Eretz Yisrael, which I understand is not the same. So in theory, if they do everything correctly, it's on a higher level for many aspects. Again, you have to decide for the Shechita on your own. Tonight's not the form for that. Two more, and then I have to catch a ride. Anyone? Okay. I hope it helped. I hope it adds some clarity. Don't be insulted, but you gotta hear what it is to say. It's like I said, it's anyone that knows me knows I'm far from politics when it comes to this. I really am. I'm ash apolitical.